You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 81. The Marriage of Njord and Skadi. Beyond the girdle of flint gray water and the loveless lava flows, beyond the burning blue crevasses, lay Thrymheim, the storm home of Skadi and her father Thiazi. It was a wonder that the hall withstood the charges of the wind and the batteries of hail. Thiazi was not there. He had gone in pursuit of his prisoner Idun, the goddess who had escaped him. Skadi waited for them to return, and as the sun slipped over the horizon, the sky in the west seemed to catch fire and blazed. The white knight dallied and yielded. Another dawdling day passed, and still Thiazi and his captive did not come back. Then Skadi was alarmed, and thought the gods must have ambushed him, and even as she waited she knew in her heart that she would never see her father again. Skadi's pale eyes gleamed. She grew cold with anger, then icy with fury. She swore vengeance on his murderers. Skadi walked from chill room to chill room in Thrymheim. She donned a coat of mail and a helmet, and chose the finest of her father's weapons, a sword engraved with magic serpentine patterning, a spear with a shaft of ash, a circular shield covered with hide and inlaid with birds of prey, gleaming gold eyes and gaping red beaks. Then she set out for Asgard. Now that Idun walked among them again and the giant Thiazi was dead, now that they had recovered the apples of youth, the Aesir were carefree once more. They were aware of the clement sun as if they had never felt it on their backs before. They listened to each note of each bird call and watched every grass blade growing. They felt at peace with themselves again and at peace with each other. When Heimdall saw Skadi nearing the walls of Asgard and raised the alarm, the gods had no wish to see more blood spilt or to prolong the feud. Some of them gathered and met the giantess and asked her, "Will you take gold for your father's death?"
"What good would that be?" asked Skadi. "Have you never heard of my father's wealth? When his father Olvaldi died, he and his brothers Edi and Gong came into a gold hoard. They measured it out in mouthfuls, as so to share it fairly. And whatever belonged to my father now belongs to me. No, I will not take gold."
"What will you take?" asked the gods.
"A husband," said Skadi, and she looked longingly at Baldur, fairest, most gentle and wise of the gods. "I'll settle for a husband and a belly full of laughter."
Then the gods conferred and agreed that Skadi should choose a husband from amongst them as payment. They did, however, make one condition.
"You must choose him by his feet," said Odin. "Until you've chosen, that is all you'll be able to see of him."
Skadi was not unwilling, and Odin arranged for all the gods to gather in a courtyard so that the giantess could make her choice. Shielding her eyes from all but the gods' feet, Skadi lost no time at all, but at once chose the most shapely pair of feet, believing that they would naturally belong to Baldur, the most handsome of the gods.
"A good choice," said Odin.
Skadi quickly looked up and gazed into the friendly, knowing eyes, not of Baldur, but of the Lord of Seafarers and Sea Harvests, the god Njord. His skin was weathered, and he had the clear gaze of one who has spent long at sea. He even smelt of salt. Skadi was startled. She stepped back, and her icy look killed Njord's smile.
I thought, she began.
Think carefully, said Njord. Remember the words you speak now are the beginning of a marriage.
I've been tricked, said Skadi bitterly.
You might have chosen Loki, replied Njord unperturbed.
So you have your husband, then, said Odin. A fair reward for your father's death. Many would say, indeed, the better of the bargain.
You've forgotten the laughter, said Skadi.
That's easily put right, said Odin.
Skadi shook her head.
Since my father died, I've brimmed with anger, been drained by fatigue. I'll never laugh again. Where's the trickster? Asked Odin.
Loki stepped forward, rather less jauntily than usual. He wondered whether Skadi knew that he had not only helped her father to steal the apples, but helped the gods to recover them too, and so brought about her father's death.
Can you make this lady laugh? Said Odin. If anyone can, you can.
Not I, sir,
stammered the sly god, as if he were some peasant standing before the High One.
Not before I've told you what's happened, sir.
Loki produced a long leather thong from behind his back.
It was like this. I was going to market, and I wanted to take the goat there along with me.
Loki winked at Skadi.
You know how goats are, don't you, lady? They have ideas of their own.
Loki stumbled across the courtyard where all the gods and Skadi were assembled, and tied one end of the thong to the goat's beard.
Both my hands were full, lady. I was carrying produce to the market, and so I tied this goat to a tegument.
A tegument? Said Skadi.
Lady, said Loki. My testicles!
And he looped the thong behind his scrotum. The goat moved a little further off to nibble at new grass, and the thong linking them tightened.
Early in the morning it was, lady. Ah, very early. The goat suckers were still singing.
The trickster cupped his hands to his mouth, closed his eyes, and made a magical soft whirring sound.
Rrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr
blocked the goat as Loki pulled back. It was a tug of war. And when the goat gave way, it gave way so completely, bounding towards Loki, that he fell backwards into Skadi's arms. And Skadi laughed. Despite herself, she laughed, and for a while she forgave Loki everything because of her laughter.
"Playing the goat," said Loki, panting.
"Enough," said the Allfather. "I've a mind to please Skadi further."
Then Odin took two liquid marbles from his gown, and Skadi recognized her father's eyes.
"But look," cried Odin. He hurled the balls into heaven. "Two stars," he said. "Your father will look down on you and on us all for as long as the world lasts."
Then Njord asked Skadi to go with him to his hall, the shipyard Noatun. But Skadi said she would only live with Njord in her old home, Thrymheim.
"Since neither of us is going to get his way entirely," said Njord, "we had better agree to take turns. 9 nights in one place, then 9 nights in the other."
Then Njord and Skadi left the courtyard in the kingdom of Asgard and made their way to Jotunheim. They climbed over rock and scree, and through sheets of snow too bright for the eye when the sun shone on them. A dreary, uniform wasteland when clouds masked the sun. And the higher they climbed into a frozen world as still as death itself, the happier Skadi became. In Thrymheim, she gave herself to Njord. After 9 nights, however, Njord admitted that he had no love for the icy mountains.
"And," he said, "I think the howling of the wolves sounds ugly compared to the whooping of swans."
Then Njord and Skadi came back to Asgard and passed 9 nights at Noatun, and Skadi's dislike of the fertile, rocking sea was no less great than Njord's dislike of the barren mountains.
"I cannot even sleep here," she said. "There's too much noise in the shipyard, and too much noise from the harbor. Boats putting out, boats coming in, the unloading of fish, and the mewing gulls disturb me, flying in at dawn from deep waters."
It was not long, then, before Njord and Skadi decided that the gap between their taste was so great that although they were married, they must live apart. Njord stayed at Noatun, and Skadi returned to Thrymheim. The giantess covered great distances on her skis. Her quiver was always at her side, and she hunted and shot wild animals. The ski goddess, that crouched, dark shape sweeping across the desolate snowscapes, took injury and death wherever she went. She had been touched by the god of plenty. She had yielded a little, and then frozen again.
All right, so there we have it, the marriage of Njord and Skadi. Sort of the ultimate tale of unreconcilable differences. It's an odd little myth, I have to say. Not odd in the sense of a giant and a god getting together, because that happened all the time. And we had even Thor, who was the sworn enemy of the giants, had a giantess as a mistress and bore sons with her. But I think odd in the sense that it really doesn't come to a definite ending. You know what I mean? There's not like a conclusion and either it's a tragedy or everyone's happy. It just sort of is what it is. And we just sort of left with this idea, neither one of them is happy, so they both agree to be separate from each other. And I suppose that being the pragmatic people that the Vikings were, this makes perfect sense that you would have to have a story that doesn't have a satisfying ending. And maybe this is a reflection of, you know, you don't always get what you want, even if you think you want it a lot. And you know, speaking, of course, Skadi, who wanted Balder and ended up with Njord, who would not have been her first choice. Though, if she had his foot fetish, I mean, you know, hey, he had the best feet, right? But it's sort of like the idea of, like, when you're a kid, and you get up on Christmas morning all excited, and you rush downstairs, and you open your presents, and you get socks. Sort of in that sense. And so I think that it does have a function, at least in the Norse mythology. But it's a weird little myth, and it's not really a tale of epic battles. It's not really something that would inspire awe. But it is kind of a homely little myth with a little comedy relief, little off-color humor. I kind of wonder sometimes about the bards and the storytellers who would tell these things to the assembled groups around the fire. What was the point of this? Was this a bridge sort of myth to go from one epic storyline to a different epic storyline? And so this was just sort of a in-between sort of thing. You know, as an actor, I kind of wonder sometimes about the theatricality or perhaps the narrative structure of the storytellers. And, you know, did they tell several myths in a row and try to bridge them? And maybe this was one of the bridges because it doesn't really fit neatly anywhere else in the cosmology. I suppose in large part that's probably because there are so many myths that have not survived to the present day. And so we really don't know how everything fits together precisely. One of the things that, you know, I try to do, and I talked about the music, Mats Wendt, the invincible sword of the elf smith. And this is the Norse mythology set to music, and it's the music that we play on the show. And I actually talked quite a bit about it before. But there isn't actually a piece of music for this myth. And I think that's a testament to the fact that it's kind of this little side thing off on its own. But anyway, I really do enjoy this sort of thing. And I think next time we'll probably cover the prequel, as it were, to this and have the story of Idun, because this is something that I've been intending to get to for a while. And of course, we'll have that 9 episodes from now in episode number 90. So we do have a Thor comic to cover, so without any further ado, let's move on with our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the god of thunder, mighty Thor.
So come back with us to 1998 and Thor number 3. This issue has a cover date of September of 1998, retailed for $1.99, which is $2.80 in Canada. Cover art is by Johnny Romita Jr., inked by Claus Johnson. and shows Thor apparently underwater. You can tell he's underwater by the bubbles coming out of his mouth. And he is getting ready to attack this horrible, monstrous, giant sea creature, and somehow is able underwater to whirl his hammer around just as fast as he would be able to in the air. But anyway, we open up to the splash page, where indeed we have the credits. Dan Jurgens was the writer. John Romita Jr. was the penciler. Claus Johnson Jr. was the inker. Gregory Wright was again the colorist. Richard Starkings was the letterer. Tom Brevoort was the editor. And Bob Harras was the editor-in-chief. And we have the title of the story, God and Man. And as you recall, last episode where we had Hannah, who is the fiance of Jake Olson, who is visiting his old apartment because she thinks he's dead and she's going to go visit the apartment anyway. And she opens the door and is confronted by none other than the late Jake Olson. And he is standing there in a towel as though he's just gotten out of the shower. And he has a moment. So Jake Olson is saying here at the panel, dead? Me? Do I look like a dead man? And we see him standing there with kind of a weird smile on his face. And the image of Thor, some ghostly image of Thor, hanging symbolically in the background. And Hannah is all very surprised. It's like, I mean, good Lord, Jake, Demetrius, your best friend in the whole world, he told me you died in that Avengers conflict by the docks. And Jake is like, no, I just roughed up a bit, but the Destroyer, perhaps they lost track of me in all the action. And then he says something odd. He says, why are you here, woman? And we see still, you know, this kind of ghostly image of Thor behind him to tell the reader who he actually is. And Hannah rushes forward and grabs him. Oh, Jakey, you can't imagine how relieved I am. I already lost one husband. I don't want to lose another. And Jake is like, husband? And she's like, don't play coy with me, Mr. Olson. If you dare claim amnesia, that you don't remember our wedding plans, why, I'll never make you my special deep dish pizza again.
Pizza.
And he's like, wedding? I'm Jake Olson, and who are you? And she's like, I'm worried. Are you sure you're okay? Now you seem addled and confused. And he's like, these hands, they're so small. And my voice, it sounds different.
Sounds heavenly to me. I thought I'd never hear it again.
And he's apologizing to her for being confused. And he's blaming it on the battle and not feeling like himself. And she's like, I understand why. Because the news said it was like a real war down there. And, you know, we have this little conversation with them. And, you know, he's obviously, you know, Jake here, a.k.a. Thor, is really confused about what's going on because his head is full of the memories of Jake Olson, but he doesn't really know who this woman is, and he knows who Jake Olson is, and he knows things about him, but he really doesn't have his memories. So this is sort of an imperfect binding here of Jake Olson. So this isn't really the sort of, you know, Dr. Don Blake situation that we had earlier in the series, where they really shared memory, and Don Blake knew everything that Thor did and vice versa. So this is something a little bit different. And finally, Jake is like, please, I need to rest. Get some sleep.
Fine, just as long as you aren't trying to weasel out of our arrangement for this afternoon.
And he's like, arrangement? And she's like,
it's Friday, Jake. I work the night shift, so it's your day to pick up Amanda after school.
And he's like, Amanda, oh, I guess I did forget, because he doesn't have any clue what she's talking about. And she's like, are you sure you're okay? Don't forget my little girl, or I'll have your head. And gives her the name and address of the school. And he's like, okay, I'll be there. And she makes him promise that he'll be there. And so at this point, he learns that her name is Hannah, which we already knew. Promises to be there no matter what to pick up her daughter. And she says,
thanks. One more thing, Jakey. I love you. Don't you ever do this to me again.
And she gives him a big old smooch. And she goes to leave, says, see you in the morning, lover boy. He's like, indeed. Get thee gone, woman. And she's like, huh? What did you say?
A joke. Don't worry about Amanda, okay?
And he's thinking to himself, even though I shall doubtless be most concerned, for I know not what the girl looks like. And Hannah leaves, and he says out loud, for that matter, I don't know what I look like. Who am I? What have I become? And he goes back into the bathroom, and he just catches the barest glimpse of himself in the mirror looking like Thor. But he's like, hey. Then he looks in the mirror again, and it's Jake Olsen there. He says, that's me? I know I agreed to this, but it's not what I bargained for. It was that guy Marnot. He's the one who set this up. Said it was my fault Jake Olsen died. He promised me that by living out Jake's life, I could make up for that terrible wrong. But all this? A life with relationships and people I know nothing about? And they use an artistic device here of Jake staring at himself in the mirror, and we see, you know, the symbolic images of Hela and Marnot in the mirror, you know, and the fiery hell that, you know, I don't get the fiery bit, because hell is not fiery. It's cold and desolate. But anyway, symbolism. You know how that works. So he/Thor Jake is getting dressed, and he says, I feel aspects of Jake's life, but the details are a total mystery. I'm not equipped to deal with any of this. I'll worry about it later. Right now, I have to find a picture of Amanda, or I'll be in deep, deep trouble. And we shift scenes to deep, deep trouble. Well, sort of. We have a submersible, sort of a mini submarine, and a couple of scientist types who are driving this thing in the deepest part of the ocean and talking to each other. The hull's integrity is sound. Another 60 feet will be deeper than man has ever gone before. Of course the hull is still holding up. Tony Stark himself designed this baby. If he's as good as they say, we could take it well beyond the prescribed limits. And they see something at the bottom of the ocean. It's like, hey, what's that? Hokey smokes, Bullwinkle. What the? Chip? I think we just made ourselves the scientific discovery of the decade. That's a Viking boat. Probably been there for centuries. And we see that it is indeed a Viking-style ship. And it has this weird, monstrous sort of figurehead on it, and yeah, it's pretty much intact, including the sail is very intact. Scientists are like, well, how can it be intact? The wood should have rotted away a long time ago. So it was preserved somehow. That makes it our lucky day. Gilgan the skipper, come in, skipper. And they're calling up to the surface their the ship, I guess, where the submersible is based of, and they're like, Skipper here, what's up, boys? You sound excited. We should. We'll be millionaires. When you hear what we... Hey! Reverse the engines! Take her up! Hurry! And the guy on the ship's like, Captain, something on sonar. Something big. Gilligan, are you okay down there? Chip? And you can see that the submersible has been grabbed by this great big, giant, ugly starfish creature. And I mean, this is like Starro on steroids. Actually, it's a lot cooler looking than Starro. If you don't know who Starro is, go back and read really old issues of Justice League. So the submersible's been grabbed by this giant starfish thing, and they're like, don't move, maybe it'll go away. But no such luck, as the giant starfish crushes the submersible with a poosh scrunch. And I guess the guys in there are crispy critters now, and we hear a voice, well done, precious, very well done. The landlings must learn once more to fear the wrath of Sedna, the sea spirit. And we have this woman, sort of undersea creature, big trailing tendrils, and not really tentacles. This weird sort of shoulder piece thing. Very extreme 90s sort of design. It's a sort of non-functional giant shoulder pad thing. Into some sort of medallion and clunky bracelets. And now, I actually looked up this character on Wikipedia. Sedna is actually a sea goddess of the Inuit people and other northern people. So this is like a far north ocean goddess. I'll tolerate no interference with that which draws me here. Countless generations have passed since I visited this area. So it must be, for these waters are far too warm, weakening even a goddess such as I. The cold, deep waters of the north are more to my liking. A sojourn this far south would be unthinkable. But for this, no wonder I sensed it from afar. A beautiful vessel fashioned not by human hands, but by the hands of gods. I wonder which gods. Reveal your secrets to Sedna. Show me what these eyes, these incredible jewels, have seen, and that I might find your masters. And we see that this ship's figurehead has these giant rubies as eyes, and Sedna is going to grab them, I think. And we shift scenes back to New York City, and we have Demetrius, and he looks like he's unloading the ambulance or whatever. And he's saying something odd to himself. He's like, "There, no way anybody will find out now." And we hear a voice, "What you looking for, Demetrius? Lose a box of Band-Aids?" And he's like, "Hannah, girl, you looking real fine for a woman who just lost her fiancé."
"That's what I came to tell you. We haven't lost anyone. I just came from Jake's. And aside from feeling a little foggy, he's as alive as you or me."
"Jake-o? Alive? No way. I mean, I thought I saw him die."
"Yes, your partner's alive and well. With all the smoke and action at the scene, I guess you just didn't see him get to safety."
"You gotta be hating me for saying otherwise."
"So the next time you, Jenny, and us double date, it's your treat."
"It's the least I can do."
"It's our lucky day, Demetrius. Be happy. See ya."
And she goes running off, and his mood changes real fast.
"Happy? How can I be happy? When Jake did, I had the perfect patsy to pin this evil business on. Now, I had to be more careful than ever."
And we cut back to Jake Olson, and he's changed into his uniform, you know, being an EMT. But he's not really remembering here, you know, being Jake Olson. He's leaving his apartment building, and he's thinking to himself, "What manner of bedevilment hath befallen me? I knoweth not the ways of this mortal's life. 'Tis folly to think me capable of carrying on in his stead. Such an arrangement be doomed to end in disaster. The factual aspects of Olson's life are unknown to me. 'Tis only a feeling, intuition, that guides me anon. Methinks the time hath come to change back to Thor, and to leave behind this mortal form forever." And as he's thinking about that, who should appear but Marnot appears right in front of him and poofs on the middle of the street, because of course we know Thor, and indeed Jake Olsen apparently, loves to stand in the middle of the street. And Marnot is like, "Inadvisable, Thunder God. The consequences would be far more severe than you could possibly know."
"Marnot, you put me in this body, and it's up to you to fix it."
"Easy, big fella. You're the only one who can see or hear me. No sense letting the rest of the world think you're nuts. We made a pact, Asgardian, one not to be broken. Your actions resulted in Olsen's death. You must now atone for that fact." "Who are you to judge me? I apologize for my mistakes. But that doesn't mean I can walk into his life and live it for him."
You see that other people see him standing in the middle of the street talking to nobody, because of course he's the only one who can see this Marnot. And the guy is saying, "If I ever need an ambulance, they better not send him." And he's talking out loud here.
"Just how does this work, Marnot? Where's my body? Thor's body? Suppose Thor's needed. How do I change? Can I change?" "You need all you need to know, Asgardian. Leave it at that. No more riddles. I demand to be restored to my rightful—" "You are in no position to demand anything. Do so again, and Hela shall feast on two souls, Olsen's and yours, for eternity."
And Marnot goes to poof away in a blaze of green light. And Jake's like,
"Wait, don't go. My hammer. I need to know where my hammer is."
And again, like, some guy passing by in the street is like, "Relax, bud, buy a new one." And Jake Olsen's like, "Oh, thanks." Just as that happens, we see the wispy figure of Sedna flying through the buildings of New York City. Jake's like, "What the hell?" And she's like,
"Show me where I might find your god, the sailor and the fisherman. I sense the one I seek is to be found among these dwellings of brick and mortar. Reveal him to me, or feel the full and righteous wrath of Sedna."
And we see that she has the two eyes of the ship, these sort of rubies, and they're dangling from these strings attached to her shoulders. And she's got these like big waves of water that she's riding on, kind of like Iceman rides on his ice slides. And
"Let this demonstration of my power, the power of the seas themselves, demonstrate the consequences you shall suffer if the owner of that proud vessel does not step forth."
And she's spilling these big waves of water through the streets,
and you get this whoosh crash, and you're washing people and things down the roads in New York City, and things are getting destroyed. And the wave picks up Jake Olsen and throws him into like an alleyway, and he's like, those jewels Sedna has, they're from the ship I once commanded in Asgard. And that's actually harkening back to the early 60s, a Journey into Mystery, like 120. I mean, this is like way, way back, 1966, 1967.
She might know what happened to the gods. My father and friends have to change, but I can't. No matter how hard I try, how hard I concentrate, I can't do it. I don't know how. I curse thee, Marnat. Forever and always, I curse thee in the name of Almighty Odin. And he takes his fist and he doesn't notice his fist is glowing as he holds it up, and there's like this blue Kirby crack all around it. And he slams his fist down to the ground, and you get a tomb. And he changes into Thor. And it's the first time it's happening, so it happens kind of in slow motion. And it's like, of course, the words of Marnat be true. In days past, when the guise of Donald Blake, I did strike mine cane upon the ground to become Thor. And now I striketh anew, freeing the energies of Asgard Eternal to wash over me, transforming me anon. Let mighty Mjolnir solidify within mine grasp. Let the world rejoice as her proud champion is reborn again. Above all, let the cosmos entire know that Thor, son of Odin and immortal of Asgard, doth stand in defense of mankind once more. And Thor is standing there, and he's whirling his hammer around, and he's surrounded by Kirby Crackle. And he goes off to confront Sedna. And in the next panel, you notice that she has webbed fingers, which I didn't notice before, but it makes perfect sense. And he's flying towards her.
You are the one even more handsome than I dared hope.
Thou art in possession of Asgardian relics, woman. If the responsibility for Asgard's destruction rests with thee, then thou shalt payeth a penalty most severe.
Payeth? I don't know if that's really a word.
Ah, threats. It has been a long time since anyone dared threaten me. Stimulating indeed. But you must first recognize your master.
And she hurls like this water bolt at him. And he's like, I say thee nay. Knoweth now, and knoweth so long as life doth pulse within thee, Sedna. Thor, god of thunder, calls no one master. And he whirls his hammer around, and this like water bolt splashes off of it, and it causes it to be raining down below. Some guy in the street's like, where's this water coming from? Where's this rain coming from? Not a cloud in the sky.
It's that Thor guy, tearing it up with some water woman.
You shouldn't be calling Thor a guy when he's a god.
As if. And we then cut to the public school, 37th Street, and Amanda, the daughter of Hannah. And she's hanging around outside her school, and school's out, and she's waiting for Jake Olsen, who, is not arriving because he's fighting this water chick.
Don't you worry, Amanda. Soon as school's out, Jake will be there to pick you up.
Right, Mom. When are you going to realize the guy's a jerk? He doesn't care about you or me. Probably off chasing some other babe right now.
And we shift back to the fight between Sedna and Thor. And she's riding around on her waves in the sky. I don't know how the water stays up, but I never understood that about Iceman's slides either. How they just kind of stay up. You'd think they'd kind of fall down and melt slowly and crush people and all that stuff. I mean, ice is heavy. And water's not exactly light either. And Sedna's taunting Thor, says,
a most unique weapon you wield, warrior. Few have ever stopped the power of the oceans themselves.
Of all omnipotent Odin's many creations, enchanted Mjolnir be mayhaps the mightiest, as thou shalt soon discover.
And he made a little mistake there, because, it wasn't Odin that created Mjolnir. If you remember, it was the dwarves who created Mjolnir. Anyway, so he hurls Mjolnir after her, and it splashes through her wave that she's kind of riding on, and she's like,
impossible! Never before has anyone shattered my column of transport.
And Mjolnir, of course, returns to Thor's hand, and Sedna realizes she's kind of in trouble, so she starts saying,
hear my song of the deep, my precious, heed the siren call of Sedna.
And she starts singing this song that goes like this, oh! And she's summoning one of her her minions. Turns out to be this big old sea serpent thing. It's kind of wicked looking. It's got this big old tongue and big old toothy mouth. And well, we saw it on the cover. I don't know how else to describe it. It's like a kind of a whalish looking head, but this huge lower jaw, these big jagged teeth. A big, ugly, scary-looking thing. It's got four tentacles or six tentacles, something like that. And a big old monster, anyway. And it's going, Screak! Screak! I imagine it making like a Godzilla noise or something.
Come quickly and to do battle on my behalf.
Summon all the beasts and devils of hell itself. And know thee well that the God of Thunder shall vanquish each and every one and send them scurrying back whence they came.
And he grabs on to Sedna, and she's like, release me! And he hurls his hammer at the sea monster, and the sea monster swallows the hammer. And Thor's kind of surprised by this, and he's like, by my troth, yon beast swallows Mjolnir! Madness! Doth he not realize that no barrier of sinew, rock, or armor can prevent mine hammer from returning? And the sea creature's like, Screak!
Which I guess is monsteries for,
I don't know, and I don't care.
Sedna has wrapped Thor up in her tentacles and tentacles, I guess you could say.
She's like, I realize, proud one, that after a seeming eternity of unending loneliness, I have the mate I have craved for so long.
Never. Whilst I am able to fight, whilst mine will be mine own, I'll not succumb to thee.
So you say. Then leave me now, warrior, if you can.
And Sedna dives into the Hudson River and takes Thor with her. So with a giant spoosh, they go below the water. And I wonder if that was intentional. It should say spooge. Anyway, they're in the water, and she's dragging Thor deeper and deeper. And Thor's thinking to himself, by Odin's beard, struggle though I do, freedom be not mine to obtain. Would almost seem as though a transformation doth sweep over me, as though I weaken. And Sedna saying,
even the strongest of warriors must answer to magic, mighty one. Come to me, precious, our time here is done.
And the sea monster follows them down. And we then shift scenes again back to the school, where Amanda's waiting all alone, and just sitting on the stairs of the school all by herself. And kind of not, being too cool here. He's like,
loser. Soon as Olsen gets here, I'll call him for the bust he really is. If he gets here, that is.
And Amanda is confronted by these thuggish-looking guys. They,
what's up, little girl? You looking like you lost your best friend. Yeah, kind of like in your sorrows.
And we then shift back to where Thor is being dragged down into the watery depths by Sedna. And he like bubbles coming out of his mouth and stuff.
Sedna saying, struggle not, though you are unable to breathe now. Once my powers have transformed you, the sea will forever be your home.
And he's thinking to himself, Mjolnir, why dost thou not return to thy master's hand?
To be continued. And that is Thor number 3, also known as Thor number 505. Okay, to be fair, a decent enough issue. I mean, the story is nothing special, but at the same time, it does kind of continue on. We're building on some of the subplots that we had from earlier in the series. We have, some kind of interesting twists to get a little bit more of a clarification of the sort of Thor / Jake Olsen, kind of what he is and what he isn't, what he remembers, what he doesn't remember. And some of the pieces are starting to gradually come together in that regard. Have a little sinister subplot here with Demetrius. And, that's okay. I mean, that's the sort of thing that keeps the character development flowing. And so I don't have any problem with that. Goddess of Sedna, her motivations are still a little bit murky. Obviously, she didn't come all the way here to New York City just to find a mate. That doesn't seem like the sort of thing that she should be doing. I could see somebody who man-hungry like Jane Foster doing that, but why would this Inuit sea goddess do that? It doesn't make any sense to me. Obviously, if she's looking for the Asgardians,
and she's going to find their ship and try to use these gems to detect them. I don't think that getting laid is quite what she has in mind. So I think there's something here that we really don't know yet. I like the look of the book visually. Again, like I say, I'm liking Johnny Romita Jr.'s art. I'm not sure that I really care for Claus Johnson's ink. Maybe it's just me, but I just don't kind of care for Claus Johnson's inks in general. And I've talked about that on this show before. As I've been saying for the last couple of issues, I really kind of do like Johnny Romita Jr.'s art. One of the things, though, that I don't like about it is sometimes it's overly angular. I don't mind a little bit of angular. And for some artists like Bill Sienkiewicz, for example, I think that the angularness actually adds to the composition. This is where I'm not really sure it works. And it's a little bit more angular this time around than it has been in the past. Love the design of this weird tentacly monster that Sedna has summoned. Very, very Kirby-esque, in my opinion. I really like the way it looks. It's sufficiently menacing. However, I kind of wonder what holds this thing upright. It doesn't look like it's really meant to be this giant thing rearing out of the water. It looks more like this weird, very toothy sort of eel thing. It almost reminds me of those sort of demonic Asgardian fish that Thor was out hunting way back in Journey into Mystery days, when he's kind of riding around on this ice sled and hunting fish with a gun. Remember that? It kind of reminds me of one of those things, except really, really big. I think the problem, though, is that this thing, even though it has this enormous head and it's full of these really huge teeth, has kind of a skinny body. And it shouldn't really be able to hold itself upright in this way. Seems as though to me that it would be a little bit too top-heavy to do that. It still looks pretty cool, though. But again, it's comics. You have to suspend disbelief. As a monster attacking New York City, I think it's pretty effective. Already, this little kid Amanda is becoming the new Jane Foster. I don't like her, and I think that she should go away. Not necessarily that they should kill her off, but it just to me, it's not a real strong character. It's kind of a one-note character. I can see some potential there for Hannah and possibly for Amanda as well. But at the same time, the most interesting of these new characters is Demetrius. I guess I could do without the whole Demetrius's sinister secret storyline, but again, that's just started. This is really the first inkling that we have that Demetrius isn't really the good friend that he appears to be. Now, as to Dan Jurgens' writing, yeah, I'm enjoying it pretty well. I mean, it's only 3 issues in, but I'm hoping that we're going to see a little bit more, maybe more epic scope, you know, like the old Simonson, maybe, where we have some really big doings, and hopefully we'll have some of that soon. I understand right now we're kind of just getting started and still introducing people, but hey, you know, that's what the first issues are for. On the other hand, the first issues really need to grab you, because I think that a lot of time that can mean the difference between, you know, a series really succeeding and really failing. All right, so that's it for this week. Thanks very much for listening. Of course, you can email the show if you choose to do so. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And indeed, you can talk to us on Facebook. Just search for Radio Free Asgard in the little searchy box, and we will be the only thing you find. All right, so from Chicago, Illinois, this is Tom Harris signing off for this week, and we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard.